Welcome to the Fitness and Lifestyle Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Kennedy, and I'm here to help you become the very best version of yourself. What's up, guys? Welcome back to this week's episode of the Fitness and Lifestyle Podcast. Today, I'm joined by my friend and my physio, Ben Humphreys from Results-Based Physiotherapy. How are you, mate?
I'm good, brother. How you doing?
Doing really well. Thanks, man. It's a pleasure to have you on, mate. We've been trying to tee it up for a little while, but every time I ask you, you say no. So finally, you've said yes.
Mate, it's more like you're too busy, mate. You're jet setting around the world with interviewing people from left, right, and center. So I'm glad you've given me a shot, mate.
Don't fuck it up. All right. So let's get stuck into it, man. I want to ask like a bunch of different questions, which I think will add some value to the listeners. Obviously, for those that have tuned in, most people have a rough idea of what a physio therapist does and what the purpose of their job is. What I wanted to go into today is, I guess, some problems that you see with maybe the way that some people are treated, but also some problems that arise that could definitely be could be avoided if we just take better care of certain things, like in terms of shoulder health and maybe hip mobility and all this different type of stuff and glute activation. But we'll jump into that soon. So the first thing I wanted to ask you, mate, is what's I guess the number one problem that you have with clients that come in to see you that you think could definitely be avoided?
It's pretty like it depends, right? It depends on who you see, what type of clientele. Are they athletic? Are they old? You know, are they desk jockeys, whatever it may be? Now, I can speak for my clientele and physiotherapists in general, but the main thing people present to is pain, right? You've got pain, dysfunction, you've got an injury, you know, you've got a headache or lower back pain that won't go away, et cetera, et cetera. So the main thing that presents to us as physiotherapists is people in pain and in dysfunction. They and then the dysfunction is more on like if they've got, let's say they want to go return to footy or something like that, and they've got coming back from a ACL reco or some surgery, they're just looking for a pathway to get from A to B. B might be, you know, playing footy, so therefore you got to get them from A to B. But do you want to know specifically what I see mainly?
I'll give you an example. So like for me, in terms of poor mobility things, for me, I see it almost every day, regardless of whether anyone works at a desk or not. With clients that I work with, is usually just the good old tight hip flexors, which then usually leads to the anterior pelvic tilt, which usually leads to weak hammies and underactive glutes. So that's a pretty common issue for me, and that's something that I work on with a lot of my clients. So is it like a specific injury or tightness or issues problem that you have that comes up often that you think could definitely be avoided if we were doing X, Y, or Z?
Yeah, 100%. So a big one for me, like, who doesn't have some postural issues going on? So mainly conditions relating to the spine. So to give you a bit of context, 95% of my clientele are, you know, the mean age of 28. Everyone trains upwards of three times a week at resistance training, or they play a sport or something like that. So my clientele is quite unique to me, because the average, I guess, physiotherapy clientele might be somewhere 40s or something like that. But even still, these people still battle with postural problems. So given our generation and our usage on phones and laptops and all that sort of thing, everyone spends a lot of time sitting, a lot of time in shitty postures. You know, I'm guilty of that, you are guilty of that. So biggest things are lower back pain, stiffness, and then probably some neck stiffness pain, and often with necks you can see headaches and that sort of thing as well. So they can be avoided to a point, but again, you got to weigh up the person's sort of working conditions. Now, if you're a software engineer and you're required to sit at a desk, like, the best you can do is get a stand-up desk. You know, it depends how much effort you want to put into mobility work, trigger ball work, foam rolling, strength and conditioning. Like, you can offset your postural sort of damage as best you can, but if the behavior continues, then the outcome is the same regardless. You can only sort of mitigate some of those problems that arise from the behavior, I guess.
what do you think is something that, or what's something that frustrates you with clients that come in? Because I mean, you know, I'll continue to refer back to an example in I guess my the clients that I work with to give you a better understanding. So like something that would frustrate me would be me prescribing a certain nutritional goal or training goal, hydration, sleep goal, whatever it is, and then the client coming back and obviously not having done it, or maybe said that they've done it and they clearly haven't done it. So then it makes your job a lot harder. So are there certain things that that you would recommend for people that are trying to get over, say, a soft tissue injury or a niggle or some inflammation that people just tend to I guess, ignore or choose not to do, when in actual fact it could be something that's super easy that could make everyone's life a shitload easier in regards to these little niggles that most people come across at some point in time?
Yeah, when I first started, I used to get annoyed about certain things or behaviors or whatever a client might do, but I don't really get annoyed at people anymore. And I know that you're probably in the same boat. It's just the way of words of, yeah, I don't get annoyed at it, but like, because at the end of the day, the ball's in their court. I'm like, I'm going to give you all the tools you need to get better. I'm going to diagnose the right problem. I'll do a fantastic treatment. But my capacity to help is restricted within the four walls that I practice in, and then also what I prescribe outside, which might be a strength and conditioning program. So I guess if there was something to be annoyed at, or I guess to answer your question, it would be, or frustrated with, it could be a non-compliance with some rehab or something like that. But at the end of the day, I make sure I equip the client with everything they need. So it's their responsibility to do it.
And if they don't do it, to do it.
Yeah. I'm just like, well, I gave you, yeah, we worked out what's going on. You went and you've had physio treatment. I referred you to whatever practitioner you might have went to. You then had all the strength and conditioning programs. And if the only thing missing here was a compliance, or if there was a breakdown of communication from myself to you, then that's where the frustration would fall, would be just a non-compliance. But and other than that, like the type of physio I do, it yields results with the type of sort of remedial slash physio that we do. So people get better regardless. I'd say that the other thing would be maybe when I refer off to like a chiropractor or a sports doctor or something like that, that the person doesn't do it. And then the frustration lies in when they return and say, hey, this is not better.
Not fixed, which, but I didn't which do what doesn't, you asked me to do. Yeah.
Which doesn't happen very often. I'm not trying to sound arrogant or anything like that, but the way it's set up is almost, I've created that many safety nets that like the client's bound to fall in one of them with the network of health practitioners versus the way we do physio. And then the communication strategies, if they don't understand, I guess that's my own problem with communication. But other than that, bro, there's not really anything interesting I can say on that one.
So previously in the past, like I, you know, coming from a sporting background and even just with strength training and stuff, like I spend obviously a shitload of time in the gym and training, and I just enjoy doing it. So I've constantly got something going on. And in the past, I'd always lean towards more so seeing a myotherapist over a physio, because I always found that working with a physio, the ones that I'd worked with anyway, would treat the actual problem, specific problem where the pain is, but then the underlying issue would never be addressed. And, you know, surprise, surprise, you're back there in a few weeks' time. Whereas, you know, obviously since working with you, you and I have been working now together for about a couple of years, I think, maybe just over two or roughly 2 years. And I've found that you work a lot more along the lines of like a myotherapist, where we figure out the root cause of the issue, and we not only kind of approach it from that angle, but also, like you said, set up some programs and rehab exercises to make sure that we fix the problem. So how do you feel like you separate yourself from your typical physio that's maybe some people that are listening have been to in the past and maybe not seen results with?
Yeah, that's a good question. I do get asked this a lot. The type of physio that I am, I guess I saw holes in the current sort of model of physiotherapy, and I only found those holes through, you know, my own experiences, where I would treat someone. You know, I divide physiotherapy into like three components. There's the diagnostic and ability to work out what the problem is. Two, you have the treatment phase. And then three, you have the strength and conditioning and rehabilitation, all that sort of shit. So I found that most physios, and you could probably vouch for this, usually can diagnose reasonably well, treat very poorly, but three, design decent rehabilitation, strength and conditioning programming that can get most people from A to B. But often part two is the treatment phase, where you, or the manual therapy, the cupping, the needling, scraping, all that sort of shit that, you know, you've done it all. And people who follow you and follow me will know that that's the sort of physiotherapist that I am. So
yeah,
I guess where I find that I'm different is that I'm just heavy manual therapy. So I know that certain tissue needs certain attention to get it to be able to, you know, create an inflammation phase, mm-hmm. which will then trigger a healing response. And without that stimulus, there will be no adaptation unless it's provoked. So I just saw the, why not blend physiotherapy with myotherapy or remedial massage therapy techniques to because I find that, you know, physios are very well educated in anatomy and physiology and decently educated in rehabilitation, all that sort of thing. So why not make like a physical therapist sort of practitioner who can do the whole, you know, A to Z versus just take the client 75% of the way and then go, well, let's get a remedial therapist on board as well, which is fine to do. But I'm just like, well, then this is, I guess, where it comes from, some business acuity, I guess, is just trying to hybridize what I did and try to make sure I was separate from, I guess, the rest of the people to make sure I get some clients, because I had fuck all money and no one knew who I was. So I had like zero chance of being successful unless I was to develop some alternative, I guess, strategies.
Hmm. And in the end of the day, it has to work. Like I said, it's same with any business. You can put together the best marketing, the best sales pitch, the best fucking, use the best equipment, best branding. But if your product sucks and your service sucks, then in the end of the day, you're still not going to do well. So obviously that's something that had to be taken into account as well. And, you know, you do a pretty good job of that, I guess. a lot of people listening, and this is a question that I get quite often from my clients. Most people that are tuning into today's episode at some point in time would have experienced some form of niggle or a small injury or something that's holding them back from being able to train at, I guess, the optimum level. In your opinion, and this obviously depends on what the injury is, so it's a bit hard to generalize, but in your opinion, is it something that when someone does have that that pain response, is it something that should be trained around or trained through in certain ways to keep the muscle or the joint moving? Or is it something that should be addressed, rest, and then start to rebuild again, if that makes any sense? Like, because when I was younger, I would just train through every bit of pain that I had, thinking that I could kind of work around it. Yeah, whereas, you know, certain things probably, it was probably a good thing, whereas others, it's completely fucked my body.
Yeah, we're all been there, especially young dudes. You think you're invincible, yeah. So you just punch through whatever injury you got and just hope that your body bounces back. But back to what you're saying before, like, yeah, you can have all the gear and no idea, right? If you don't have results and you're not getting the outcome, or your product's not getting the outcome that the client desires or that you advertise, then it's going to, your business is made on a house of cards, bro. It's just going to fall over. Now, going back to that question you just asked them, yeah, you're right. It depends, right? But for me, it's not like the unknown. There's a lot of health professionals, I believe, will overcomplicate things and make things quite complex and hard to comprehend. But to me, that sort of is just personifying the practitioner's inability to work out what the problem is. So to be general, it depends on the type of tissue.
Basically, you're throwing a shitload of ideas out there and hoping that one of them is going to be right sticks, at some point in time. Yeah.
Yeah. And like you and I are in the same business, right? We're in the business, people's well-being, improving people's quality of life. So therefore, the direct outcome of what we do will influence someone's well-being. So I believe that it's very important for us to take responsibility to understand what the problem is that we're dealing with. So then you can put together an appropriate solution to the problem and make sure it's the most effective and efficient solution to that person's problem. Because we're all made of, you know, most of us, two arms and two legs, and we all have very similar anatomy. So therefore we all should operate mechanically very similarly. So if you understand the body well, anatomy well, physiology well, then you should be able to work out and diagnose, all right, this is the tissue and this is the injury that is injured, and here's the appropriate solution.
Yeah.
But back to what you're saying, some injuries, depends on the tissue that's damaged. So like you've had all the injuries over the last 18 months that we've been working together. You've had some soft tissue problems. And when we talk about soft tissue, we talk about muscle tissue. And also like tenderness tissue, you can have more of a harder tissue sort of damage, which could be cartilage or it could be bone damage. Ligaments also slip into like more of that hard and soft tissue. And then you can have, that's mainly it. You can have like damage to nerves and other soft tissues such as blood vessels and all that sort of shit. But end of the day, like if it's a problem that's not going away, that should suggest that you've done, you know, the injury on the tissue that you've damaged is a tissue that takes a bit longer to heal. It stays inflamed for longer and that sort of thing. So it depends on the tissue that's been damaged. Muscle tissue, you can usually push through it, but again, depending on what's happened. So if you're in the gym training and you've got like a quad tear, for example, you can work around a quad tear. You can do different types of variations of quad loading. You can do leg press shit. You can still do like hip thrust. You can still do a lot of indirect loading and without really stirring that up. But if you're talking about a quad tear and you're trying to play footy and sprint and kick a ball, then you're going to have no chance at operating at that, you know, 90% or above capacity. Now, if you damage a tendon or a ligament, I guess a tendon's a bit poor. It has a much poorer blood supply, so therefore it's going to have a longer sort of healing time frame. So if you damage a tendon, then, man, if you keep loading that thing, it keeps getting worse and worse and worse. So chances are that until you stop doing that abusive thing that you're doing, you're not going to have a resolution to your problem. Now, if you damage a ligament or cartilage like you did, or even any like any bone damage, then you're usually going to create joint pain, or you're going to create some instability around the joint, which means you're going to have some structural instability, and you're going to have even more chances of like damaging those surrounding structures because of the lack of stability that joint may have because you've damaged some of the surrounding stability. So again, it's very hard to determine, but if you break it down into tissue types, I think that's a lot easier way to do things. And then if you look at young person versus you know, middle age versus old, and then the nutritional health of each person, that will determine how quickly someone's going to bounce back from an injury as well.
Yeah, right. Now, I don't know if you get asked this question a lot, but I guess it's relatively common confusion, I would say, as to the stretching, like let's say static stretching. What place do you think static stretching has in someone's training, pre, post, during, not at all? What's your thought process on that? Because I mean, there's that many. You know, you can do this for any topic really, but if you type it in online and try and figure out when to stretch, you'll get a fucking answer that backs up basically any time of the fucking workout.
Any time or no time, right?
Yeah. So what's your opinion?
I think like mobility is warranted for a lot of things. If like the way I break it down is if the joint or the muscle has soft tissue restriction, which is inhibiting the joint from functioning properly, full range of motion for that type of joint. You know, everyone's built differently. Everyone has different tissue types. You got people who are contortionists, and you got people who can barely touch their shins when they bend forward. So we're all built with different tissue types, and therefore, you know, what is full range of motion to you might be different for full range of motion to me. So I think it's important to understand where your body's at and what, you know, are you just a person who's really tight all the time, or are you someone who's just really flexible? So I believe you should be giving people mobility work and stretching work when there is soft tissue restriction around the joint. Let's say
pre-workout.
Yeah.
I would say there's a decent difference between, let's say, mobility stretching compared to static stretching. So if we're talking about going in and literally standing there doing a static quad stretch before you go and try and do like a fucking heavy back squat. What are you like, what in that regard, what's your thoughts on that? Do you think that should be saved for the end of the workout? And then you should be putting more emphasis, like you're touching on now, on the hip mobility and ankle mobility before the workout. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not talking so much about the mobility of the joint. General, I'm talking more about an actual target muscle stretched before a workout.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I believe you should actually be optimizing the joints' full range of motion mechanics before you put it under load. There's the thought that you should, you know, keep everything stiff and tight, especially when you're going to do some compound lifting. You should, there's the thought that you shouldn't do any foam rolling or anything like that before you start, because you want to make sure things are rigid. But at the end of the day, if you're going to have, you know, tight, soft tissue and you're going to have rigid joints, to me, you're actually increasing your likelihood of getting an injury, because you're inhibiting the tissue's capacity to take load, because it might be operating at 85%. Now, if you do a 2-minute, you know, quad stretch or whatever before you go and load it under a squat, to me, you're not increasing your chances of an injury. Now, if you're, as I said, the person who's really stretchy and there's no need for you to stretch beforehand because you can already, you know, optimize and use that joint to its full capacity, then maybe not stretching would be decent for you. But if you're like, maybe like yourself, bro, like you're sort of sitting in that middle tissue type where you're not too stretchy and you're not too flexible either. So that's the optimal tissue type to be in. And for you, for example, you should do a bit of mobility work and stretching through your soft tissue before you do some training. Mm. So that might mean if you're talking a leg day, you go do some glute stretches. You might go do some quad hamstring stretches. You might do some calf stretches, because as you mentioned before, if you're going to get under a squat, you need optimal hip mobility and ankle mobility. So if you're making sure you're increasing the mobility at the hip and the ankle, it means you're going to have less stress going through your back and less stress going through your knees. So in that circumstance, I think that you should do some light mobility work before you would go into a session. Mm. But where I actually would put stretching would be more that yoga type stuff, and I'd have a separate session throughout the week of stretching. Like you might dedicate you might dedicate half an hour a week to stretching. That will basically prime your muscles well, so that when you go to train, you're going to have optimal range or close to, and you might only need fucking a couple of minutes stretching versus heaps. So I'm not saying that stretch your heart out before you go do like your PR on squatting and deadlifting. You end up fucking tearing your muscle.
Yeah. You're just trying to get more clients. You want people to do that so they can come to you.
Mate, just make sure you drop some business cards and I'll be right. But yeah, you should do some mobility to optimize muscle and joint function for sure.
Is there an exercise that that you see, whether it be on social media or whether you've got clients that come in and tell you that they're doing it in the gym, like any specific exercise that you just think are absolute trash and that are super bad for like mechanically, for joints and for tendons and all that type of shit, that a lot of people are probably doing? So let's say, for example, like, I don't know what your thoughts are on this, but I tend to think like a behind the head barbell overhead press can't be good for your neck. And I mean, I could be wrong, but I mean, to me, that just seems mechanically a bad idea. Is there certain exercises that you see often or hear about that you think that people should cut out as soon as possible from their training program?
Man, like, this is going to piss a lot of people off, but I've got to look at statistics and what I see walk through the door, right? What exercise fucking creates the most amount of injuries? And that would be like barbell squatting, as you said, overhead pressing, shoulder pressing, barbell bench pressing, and then barbell deadlifting. Now, I'm not saying cut those out of your program, but I think that, you know, you would get this right. Like those can be quite technical lifts, so therefore there needs a bit of preparation, a bit of technique. You need to learn how to do that shit properly before you actually do it.
Mm.
But the one that I see injuring the most amount of people would be like a barbell deadlift, bro. That's common to injure discs and that sort of thing. So if you don't know what you're doing, you've never done it before, or if your PT is flogging you and making you do it and you got shit house mobility, then mate, probably steer away from a barbell deadlift and use dumbbells instead. And as you mentioned before, if you haven't got the shoulder range of motion, you've got shit ass posture, and then you're trying to barbell press behind your head. Yeah, it's like injury city for your shoulders. It's a lot of excessive load for your neck. And, mate, we're all built with asymmetries as well. So if you're getting under a barbell, you better make sure you're close to symmetrical and strength, right to left limb. And,
yeah,
like, otherwise, over time, you just build up an accumulative stress and you end up damaging tendons and all that sort of thing.
Yeah, it's funny. Like, the barbell deadlift, for example, like, unless I'm seeing a client at least once a week, like, let's say unless I'm seeing a client a couple times a week for an extended period of time and it's been like a year of training together, 9 out of 10 times, even then, I still rarely ever give anyone a conventional barbell deadlift, because I've seen firsthand that, like, even with the perfect technique, with pretty good mobility and a lot of focus on execution on every rep, I can do a heavy set perfectly and pull up sore through the lower back the next day. So you'd hate to think about how many people are doing it with fucking horrible technique, poor muscle activation, and no thought to how much execution they're doing on every single rep, how easily it is for someone to injure their back for very little reward too, especially if they're lifting with shit form and fuck all weight, or maybe too much or the weight's too heavy. They're not really getting any reward out of it, but they are putting themselves at serious risk. And I see that a lot, like you said, with a lot of the compound movements. And another one that I find is super common and just fucks so many people up is the barbell bench press. Because I can really getting close to it now, but I can't really get in a perfect position to do a barbell bench press and touch the bar on my chest without getting some form of like anterior delt and shoulder recruitment to the point where it's putting a lot of load through my tendons. And I've in the past this experience so much. So now, like, I rarely do it. I do it with a slight incline, maybe slight decline, predominantly use dumbbells. I'm switching out a lot of these exercises where in the past they would have been like the go-to exercises for chest. Because the thing is, and I talk about this all the time, is that it's not the bench press. Your head doesn't go, fuck yeah, he's doing bench press, I'm going to make his chest huge. No. Your body understands that it's like a muscle is under load. It's provided a stimulus that needs to give it a reason to change. It doesn't know what exercise you're doing. So I try and teach people about movements instead of exercises. So even the squat, for example, I know plenty of people that just hate squatting. So why do it? Especially if you're not trying to be a fucking power lifter, like, go in and do something else that's going to put the muscles under load and give you the same result, which is enjoyable and not going to risk injury. But yeah, it's frustrating. That's probably a frustrating thing for me, I reckon, actually, is just seeing how many people don't put any thought to exercise selection.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, and is your frustration is not aimed at like the client, it's aimed at the PT or the coach or the physios design these programs.
Even the coaches and the physios and the trainers out there, it's like there's just, and that's why I do this podcast as well. It's just too much shitty information out there.
Bro, it's fucking everywhere.
Yeah. Too much shitty information out there that just too many misconceptions. And like I said, there's evidence for and against fucking basically everything. So it's about trying to find the right source of information and a reliable one and actually sticking to it.
Yeah.
What
you raised before is the...
Sorry, I think we might start lagging a bit, but that's all right. You go.
I reckon you touched on one of the main things, like, that's especially where from a physio's perspective is risk to reward ratio on each exercise. Like, as you said, like, if you load up and do a barbell squat, it's compressing the fuck out of your spine. You got terrible hip mobility. You've got no ankle dorsiflexion. You've got some ongoing knee problems. It's just like, mate, why do a squat when you can go do a lunge, or you can go do a single leg press, or you can go jump on the leg press, or you can go do some hip thrust or some shit like that. Like, you got to weigh up the risk to reward. And as you said, if there's shitty program design and you got incompetent people by designing your programs and calling the shots, then, bro, you're going to get injured, man. It's good for me because I get plenty of people come through the door, but it's not good for the client or the PT who's got the injured client who leaves them because they're injured.
And before I got my knee done last year, my surgeon, this is like throughout COVID, and you'll probably remember, but like, I found out I needed surgery and then we had to wait like 2 months because elective surgery was closed. But I remember he said to me, he was just like, I can't wait until COVID's done so everyone can go back to footy and start doing their knee again so I can start working.
I said, what a dog.
All right, before we wrap things up, man, just for those listening at the moment that may be in the same field as you, like any physios listening, because I'm assuming we'll get a fair few physios tune in, or even anyone in that field, you know, remedial, myotherapist, whatever. What, in terms of the business side of things, what have you found has given you the most success in regards to generating leads, building clients, retaining clients? And I guess, like you said before, like starting out when you've got no, for those, most people that are tuned in at the moment won't have some huge following or anything like that, and aren't going to be able to just fill up their client book straight away. So what is it, what's some strategies that they can start to use to help build up their client base and retain them as well, which is super important?
You got to get Danny Kennedy and to plug you on his Instagram.
No shit, obviously, aside from that.
Oh, bro, like, you know, like business is a whole new game to what your bloody profession is. So if you want good clients, A, and you want good retention, be good at your job, produce the results, you know, all that. It goes without saying that if you deliver on the client's expectations. So that goes without saying. But from the business end, it's a whole new game. So I think that you got to be able to market yourself well. You got to, A, get the results, and B, make sure you're promoting that about yourself. So one big thing I did, and I've shared this openly 1,000 times, is I use influencer marketing. So I get, you know, people in like yourself, and we're now friends, but plenty of amateur and professional athletes I've worked with, Instagram influencers, whatever it may be. I'm like, I reach out, I say, hey, how's it going? My name's Ben. You know, everyone's got an injury. Everyone has pain. Everyone's got a sore back or a sore neck. So pain doesn't discriminate. So you reach out to these people who might have some leverage in the area that you want to be in. You do a cheeky little contra deal, make sure everyone's clear of the terms and conditions. You get other people to plug you. What I would normally do is sponsor people, or I'd do a couple of sessions where I go, well, in exchange for the treatment, can you plug this content, whatever it may be? Make sure the content looks good, because no one wants to put shitty content on their page. Let's say someone like yourself, you're not gonna, if we just record some dog shit content and I'm like, Danny, can you put this on your Instagram? And you're like, oh bro, yeah, it doesn't look good, or it's not aesthetic. You know, it's not likely to yield much engagement. So like, you'd be unlikely to go ahead with that continuously. So influencer marketing is one thing. And just, you gotta not be afraid to operate where people aren't. So you gotta be, you know, diversifying your service to a point where, you know, not everyone's doing it. And if you are doing it, make sure you're the best at it, and everyone knows you're the best at it. So best thing is marketing well, bro. Marketing well once you got your craft down pat. And the biggest thing for me was influencer marketing, and just knocking on as many doors as I could. Like, you don't get if you don't ask. If you don't ask these people to come in, they're not going to turn up on your front door. So yeah, make sure people know who you are.
Yeah, one thing I'd like to say before we wrap up as well is, obviously you take care of this because you're extremely good at what you do, but the tricky part about the fact that business is a whole nother aspect to it, the marketing and everything is a whole nother aspect to it. I think now, like these days, people are so caught up in the marketing side of things that they lose track of what their actual craft is. Mm-hmm. So people will become a fucking unbelievable marketer, but all of a sudden they're not getting their client results, or they're not continuing to upskill and learn in their actual craft. So yeah, you're fucking really good at marketing. But like for me, for example, like I don't hate it, because I understand why I would get referred to as this in some way, I guess, even though it's a bit ridiculous. But if someone says to
king,
me, like,
mate, oh, you're the king.
No, someone, yeah, well, I get that a lot. But I mean, no, no. If someone says, like, you know, you're an influencer, a social media influencer or something like that, like, the thing that I don't like about that is that I always kind of correct people and say, well, no, I'm a trainer. I'm a coach. I use my social media to provide content, provide value and build my business. But I'm always a trainer first, like always a coach first, because that's what I want to be. I don't want to be known as a marketer or a social media influencer. I want to be known as someone who helps people achieve their goals through health and fitness. And to do that, you need to continue to upskill and learn and be the top of your game and master your craft. So
absolutely.
Like you said, it's only getting harder and harder. You got to keep my fucking learning heaps of new shit with marketing and in your business. But if you can do it and you're willing to put in the work, then it'll do well. So you've been doing awesome, man. Congrats. And thanks. Thank you for your time today. And I'm sure I'll be seeing you very soon. But for those who have enjoyed today's episode or just want to see more of Ben's content, if you don't already follow him, I'll have the links to his social media and website and stuff in the show notes below. Awesome. So thanks, man.
Mate, you're a legend. Thank you very much.
Much appreciated, guys. If you have enjoyed today's episode, we'd love for you to take a screenshot and share it on your story for us as soon as possible. Tag us both. We'd love to get your feedback.